Kia ora, hello, and welcome to Bod Almighty, the practical how-to podcast helping you feel better about your body, have a peaceful relationship with food, and go out into the world with confidence. Everywhere we turn these days, someone is telling us to love your body. But how?
Well, by listening to this podcast is how.
That's right. We are your hosts, Hannah Tunnicliffe
and Michelle Sokolich. Without further ado, let's get started.
We are so excited today to welcome Angela Barnett, who is an award-winning writer, creator, and marketer. Her freelance writing has featured in The Huffington Post, Canvas, Stuff, Viva, BuzzFeed, The Villainess, just to name a few. And lastly, but not leastly, as an eating disorder survivor and thriver, Angela set up FABIC, effing awesome bulimics I know, the New Zealand chapter of Endangered Bodies, which was founded by UK author and activist Susie Orbach, and Pretty Smart, a talk given by Angela directly to teenage girls about the sneaky and wily ways of the beauty and media industries. Scanning over Angela's work history, I'm struck by how many times her job title has simply been storyteller. Angela has worked as a storyteller for TVNZ and World of Wearable Arts, and is currently employed as storyteller for the YWCA. It's not surprising then, in September of this year, Angela created Like Bodies, Like Minds, a series of seven personal stories about seven brilliant bodies and their accompanying humans. In collaboration with illustrator Ruby Jones, Like Bodies, Like Minds helps highlight the connection between body image and mental health. Because, as Angela describes it, how we exist inside our bodies is affected by how our bodies are viewed, valued, and treated. And how we're viewed, valued, and treated affects our mental health. But stories have not just been Angela's main source of livelihood. They have also educated, nourished, and helped to heal her. Other people's stories have provided Angela with critical learnings to overcome bulimia and understand herself and the world more and more deeply.
Welcome Angela. Mitch.
Hello, Marina.
So exciting to be chatting to you today. We're going to be talking about how to stop critiquing your own bod by learning about someone else's. So yeah, I think this is going to be a cool conversation. I'm looking forward to it. Before we jump into the stories, I would love to know how does hearing other people's stories help you heal yourself? How does that work?
So the idea of, it's ancient, the idea of storytelling, and the stories teach us things. And I personally, for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's a way more enjoyable way to learn something than the top 10 tips on how to have a better body image. You know, that often that feels like work. You know, we've always been told how to do better and be better and better parents and look better and behave better. And I think it can be much more powerful sometimes to gather little gems and nuggets from other people's experiences, because it's the emotional connection that you have together which really helps cement ideas. It certainly does in my mind. So for all the stories for Like Bodies, Like Minds, looking at the amazing illustrations that Ruby has done or reading the stories, you as an individual, you might not have the same experience as a young black man growing up in Dunedin or an actor in Wellington that's got chronic fatigue syndrome. But it's not the details of their stories that you might connect with, but feelings of body shame, having dark thoughts, feeling isolated or alone in your thoughts or concerned about your body, all those are universal feelings that connect all of us. So that's the power of storytelling, but also the sort of co-papa behind the project was really to burst open this idea of body image and what it is, and really explore this kind of individual responsibility versus collective responsibility, because for a long time in the body image space is the onus is put on you as an individual. If you've got a negative body image, then somehow perhaps is that your fault that you've acquired that. And the brilliant thing about looking at lots of different diverse bodies is understanding that how you feel about your own body is never your fault. It's actually the culture that we live in. And so collectively we're responsible for each other's body image rather than individually.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah.
Yeah. The positive thoughts that we all have about each other's bodies collectively help each other's body image. So that was the idea behind having really diverse stories as well.
And the other thing I was thinking when you were talking about the power of stories is the fact that stories don't often contain a straight line between point A and point B, which is what we are often presented with in learning, right? So like you said about top 10 tips, the idea in our minds is, oh, this will be linear. I'll just go from point A to point B. This will be, you know, easy. But when we hear about people's lived experience, then we understand that that's usually not the case at all.
Such a great point. It's not many things are linear, but especially
life,
learning more about ourselves, you know, living life is not linear. Recovery is not linear.
Recovery is not linear.
I think it's so helpful to learn that through other people's stories. Is okay, it's okay that I'm going up and down here. It's okay I've gone around in a big circle. Sometimes it feels like you're back where you started, it's small steps over time.
So should we get into the first story? Do you want to tell us a little bit, Angela, about Sophia?
Yes, I would love to. Let me just caveat this before I go into the three stories, is that I've got a little bit of, not imposter syndrome is not the right word, but because these aren't my stories, you know, I'm fearful that I don't want to misrepresent these stories, and I would encourage anyone listening to actually go and read the actual stories that are online on Stuff, because they're all in first person in their words, and they're going to be way better than me surmising them in a brief little synopsis. So I just wanted to say that at the beginning, and I have felt really honoured that everyone's shared their stories with me. So Sophia is an incredible young woman who, she had an accident at 19, fell off a horse, and her spinal cord shattered. And so she's ended up with a spinal cord injury that's impaired 87% of her body. And she has she's got some amazing sort of lines in her story. And sort of one of the ones that really stuck out with me is she sort of said, you know, my body doesn't really look out for me anymore. I have to look out for it. And so what she means by that is that she needs care and for some of the things that we might, you know, take for granted, but she has to really listen to her body in a way that an able-bodied person might find it hard to imagine, the level of listening. Because she doesn't have any feeling below her collarbone, then if there's, say for instance, if she's in a car accident, which she was a couple of years ago, she'll have to go and have x-rays to check that there's no broken bones, because she can't feel that the bones are broken, if that makes sense. So she doesn't get the normal signals that how other bodies work. And so how that translates is, so she'll get, the feeling that she'll get will be like a tingling in the back of her spine when something's not right. And she'll have to sort of stop, drop and scan as sort of, you know, okay, I need to, something's going on. My body's trying to tell me, but it can't tell me from the location where it's happening, but I've got a signal in the back, you know, at the top of her, back of her spine. And it might be something like a hair is wrapped around her toe in her sock too tightly. And it would not be good for the toe to stay in that position. So it can be, it could be a bee sting that she hasn't felt, but really small things that she has to dive into and listen to what's going on with her body. And that is, it's kind of sums up the ultimate goal in the body positivity movement, is to go in and to be way more about function rather than form. So what I mean by that is, you know, there's that great line by Beauty Redefined, you know, that Lindsay and Lexi, the sisters, where they say, your body is not an ornament for other people to look at, it's an instrument to help you live your life with.
Yes.
And often that one of the paths to feeling sort of body acceptance, I don't like to talk about body positivity because I think it's like talking about happiness. It's a really unrealistic goal. that sort of body acceptance is this idea of body neutrality, where you spend more time focusing on the inside of your body rather than viewing it from the outside. And so Sophia does that pretty much 24/7. She spends her time on the inside of her body. And she said, I'm going to read out this sort of line that she said at the towards the end of the interview that really sat with me as well. Is she said, post-injury, I've become more confident because there's less pressure on myself. I can't do anything to change my body. You know, you might be able to go to the gym or whatever. So because you're able to theoretically make changes, you may feel like you have to, but I can't. I'm stuck in a wheelchair and there's no societal pressure. My legs are skinny and atrophying, so I'll just reduce. So she has this thing. She sort of describes it as she stepped outside of all the ridiculous beauty ideals, because the beauty ideals are based on this idea that we can always change our bodies. And so for Sophia, she's saying, no one expects me to change my body because they see a young woman in a wheelchair. And so it's like I'm free of it. No one's expecting me to do anything. And so I guess there's two outtakes for that we all succumb to those pressures from outside pressures, especially beauty ideals. But when I'm getting a message that I need to change something, oh my God, I'm getting older or like whatever it is, then it's, I think of Sophia, it's like, okay, it's possible to exist outside these ideals. They are ideals that are created. Where's the idea for change coming from? Is it coming from me? Oh, it's coming from the outside world. It's coming from these ridiculous pressures that we're under. It's not actually me that wants to change. It's me having a sense that I should. So that was one great outtake for me. And then the second thing is just a reminder to listen to our bodies. Like if I spent more of my day listening, then, well, I know this, I have more peace internally with my body. Like I'll give you a small example. Is for years, and I think this is a product of having an eating disorder for quite a long time, was I would find it really easy to ignore what my body needs. I could wear really uncomfortable, scratchy fabric for days. I could ignore all sorts of signals in my body. I'd be quite mean to what my body was going through. And like I had this moment recently with my partner, where he's got this sheepskin rug that he's had since he was a baby, and he likes to have it next to his bed when he gets up in the morning, puts his feet out, and it's on this soft sheepskin rug. And I look at it because it's from the 70s and it's kind of yellowed and I find it quite gross, and like when I'm vacuuming it, I like try and shove it under the bed. And then recently, because I've been thinking about trying to listen more to what my body wants rather than just powering it through the days and, you know, going 100 miles an hour, just slow down and listen. And I, instead of shoving it under the bed, I actually stood on the sheepskin rug with bare feet, with just my feet on it, and I could feel my feet going, oh, this feels really nice. Really nice. And I stood on it for about 10 minutes. So that's what I mean by listening. You know, yeah. I think I've been, I would have called self-care 10 years ago like a scalding hot bath. So I'm soaking my skin and I'm also reading a book. I'm doing something as well as, you know, whereas now, and I'm so over the term self-care, but now I might go, that might look like just having a lie down if I want one. Actually listening.
I love that so much, and I can so relate to that after years and years of dieting, which actively encourages you not to listen to your body. Like, you don't know how hungry you are. You should be eating this amount of, you know, food. And so I got so detached from my body and how it felt and what it wanted. I remember that I would get my period and I'd be like, oh, whoa, like shocked. But it's so interesting. Like, where did that come from? And these days I can actually feel kind of like early signs. I'm so much more tuned in. So yeah, it is so powerful when you can start listening more to your body, and yeah, just it's amazing what it tells you.
Yeah, I completely concur. And the same as Michelle, I noticed when I started coming out of disordered eating, where, as Michelle said, you're actively snipping off the connection between your body and your brain and telling your body that she is wrong. You aren't hungry. You don't need rest. You mm-hmm. don't want a piece of cake, whatever it is, that it takes time to rebuild that communication. And something I've noticed is that I can tell when I'm ovulating, I remember somebody telling me once that they could tell when they were ovulating, and I thought they were crazy. I was like,
woo-woo, right?
Yeah. I thought this was some kind of magic sort of Hogwarts sort of a thing. But anyway, it is incredible once that if you have for a long time actively ignored messages or purposefully cut them off because it doesn't suit the purposes that you're pursuing at the time, like obviously weight loss is a major one for many of us, it can take some time, right, to get those signals back and to figure out what they mean. Definitely. I'd love for people to maybe consider at this point for themselves which messages from their bodies they take for granted, perhaps, you know, whether it's hunger, whether it's need for rest, and which messages and communication, you know, do you willingly ignore?
A great point. Yeah, we have this incredible system.
Let's move on to another story.
So June's story, I learned the most from June. So June is a young trans woman, 20 years of age, and the hearing about body dysphoria, which is something that June has, is something that as a cisgendered woman, unless I'd heard the story, I wouldn't be able to understand what does that feel like. And she described it in such a wonderful way for me. So body dysphoria is when you look in a reflection in a mirror or in glass or anywhere, and you feel like what you see is not representative of who you are. Mm. So this June would describe it as sort of being forcibly yoked to a body that doesn't feel like yours. So this is, this you could imagine as a child, it's really hard on a daily basis to have those feelings and to feel scared to share those feelings. And so how that would play out in terms of body parts for June is that June was, at the time in high school, as then identified as the assigned gender at birth, as him, would look at the sort of hairy legs of a young male and really feel like, sort of especially after puberty, that the body that June was yoked to was more and more and more throughout puberty kind of alienating the body was alienating who she was. So really hated to show legs and arms and kept wanting to cover them up, not for reasons that we often hear, which is not liking the look of them, but didn't like the representation of them, didn't like hairy boy legs. They're not representing who I am. Always wanting to wear long trousers and long sleeves, and then eventually got a trench coat. And so that's body dysphoria. And then when June talked about the amazing transition of starting to take estrogen, and it was in the first year at university, and, you know, she jokes kind of going, you know, my body took to estrogen really well. You know, we've got a great relationship, estrogen and I, and this wonderful change, and suddenly feeling like starting to shave her legs, starting to feel really confident, having arms and legs out. June now will wear little strappy dresses all the time, like loves having her skin out. And she talks about this moment when, I've got it here actually, I'll read it to you because it would be better than. So there was this moment, she says, one point I was about to get in the shower, I looked in the mirror and I thought, where the hell did I get that figure? All my fat had gone straight to my hips. I get thigh jiggling on buses now. It's physically inconvenient, but it's a pleasant inconvenience to have. Mm. So what she's talking about there is this, for June, seeing all the redistribution of fat move around on her body and go to thighs and hips and chest. And it was incredibly affirming for her to be this is the body that is representing who I am. And it really made me think about, especially for women, you know, we give our thighs a lot of stick, you know, for having too much fat on them sometimes, or for being a certain size, or for wobbling too much, or and wouldn't it be interesting to think about our bodies in a way where are they helpful for us in terms of affirming our gender, and thinking about body parts in a way that we haven't thought about before. One thing that I never liked about how my body would react to things is if I've got this amazing tendency, especially my ankles, to puff up. I'll never forget once, like the first time I caught an international flight to Thailand, and my ankle swelled up so much that when I went to put my shoes on, I thought that someone had stolen my shoes and put these other small person's children's shoes where my shoes had been, because my feet and ankles had swollen up so much that I couldn't get my shoes on. And so I like things like that I used to really not like about my body and probably be quite mean to. And I have never thought about there's a softness to that. There's a softness to that. I don't know why my ankles swell up sometimes, but there's a softness to my body and a softness to how it exists in the world. And that softness, instead of me being mean to it, which I have been at times, it's actually incredibly affirming for my gender. Mm. I've never had to walk my soft body into a room and wonder whether the room is going to be friendly towards my gender. My gender that I am. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's reframing how we think about our aspects of our body. Or my boobs. I've always had really small boobs and like A cup boobs. And I've always thought, if I could just be a B cup. You know, I was when I was pregnant, but you know, now through menopause, I have a couple of envelopes really, rather than, and I've given them a hard time. Whereas hearing June talk about how exciting it was to actually have, doesn't matter the size, but to have parts of her body developing that really represent who she is. It's a really gentle way to come back to your own body and think about how has it helped me in affirming my gender?
Or some part of your identity, even if it's not gender. Is there strength in aspects of your body that affirm certain aspects of your identity, or even softness that affirm parts of your identity? How can you look at parts of your body through a different lens? Because as you were just mentioning there, Ange, talking about boobs, you know, there are so many different boobs out there, and people with smaller boobs might wish for bigger ones, and people with bigger ones might wish for smaller ones. And so it's interesting to consider who might long for an aspect of yourself that you take for granted or actively dislike.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I remember Michelle once telling me a story of somebody who'd been very ill and who had lost so much weight that it was evidence of their illness. And I immediately thought, wow, you know, hearing that story through Michelle made me think, well, my weight is, you know, in some ways an evidence of my aliveness and my health and you know, my presence on this earth. So it's interesting to just have an opportunity to reframe your perspective through somebody else's story.
Yes, absolutely. I remember when I was in India and I was being fitted, I was getting some clothes tailor-made, and the women were all gathering around me and like grabbing at my arms and in my stomach and stuff and going, you fat, but they were like, it was such a compliment. Yeah, because it's like, wow, you're healthy, you've got enough money to eat, like, yeah. And they were just, it was amazing.
Oh, isn't it? I know. That is the wonderful thing about different stories and different narratives.
Because we do get very stuck in our own experience, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why stories are great, because they throw you into this other perspective.
So I thought it could be quite fun for us to consider a part of ourselves that we struggle with, perhaps, and consider different ways to perceive it and get each other to help out here a little bit. So, Michelle, if you say confess something that you struggle with, and Ange and I can cheerlead you through some different ways of seeing it. Now, this isn't a way to negate or invalidate the way you feel about your body or the way you experience your body. Certainly not saying that the way that you feel is wrong, but just, I guess, offering different perspectives.
I love this. I've got a body part that I do struggle with a bit, and that's my stomach. And I have kind of come around a little way to it. Like, you know, I am super grateful that I was able to have three babies, you know, so thank God I've got a stomach, you know, that kept them safe and housed and, yeah, but it is still something that I do struggle with. So yeah, I'm open for any ideas there.
I think that's interesting. Were you like, is it good to start where you've made progress already? Like you said, so thinking about function has helped you, and thinking about it's serving a purpose of creating these three life forms and giving them, a whare for that time. So is it helpful to think about function? I'd love Angela's perspective on this too. What do you think, Angela?
It's totally function. I was thinking the same thing before when you said that. Is that's how I think about with the size of my boobs. It's like, wow, you grew some babies. That's the way for me to feel love towards them. But just to do that exercise to follow through. So for you with your stomach, that because I know the pregnancy one is a good one, but the further away we get from the pregnancy, it's harder to keep hold of it.
Yes.
You know, the older our children get, it's harder to remember. Oh, that's right. That was the role of that. I produced this.
So true.
And like another way that you could think about your stomach is I think that it's an incredible signal, place for signals, our stomachs. So if I get...
Like gut instinct?
Yes, totally. Yeah. Gut instinct. So if I'm nervous about something, it plays out in my stomach, or if I'm excited about something. And I heard this as a, actually in for Beak, when I was interviewing for Beak, when I was talking to, this is going to feel like a name drop, but this is before she was as big as she is. When I interviewed Glennon Doyle for that years ago.
Did you?
And
amazing.
She said something to me, and it was all about bulimia and our shared experience of that. And she'd said to me, you know what happens now, and I think it's a real blessing, is when I'm upset about something and I get this urge in my stomach to binge. I just want to go to the pantry and attack it. She said it's like this incredible warning system that my body's trying to give me of, I'm upset about something. It's like ringing the bell. Whoa, you know, there's something bothering me. And she said, now, you know, I'll try and put in that space, the pause. I know how to put in the pause between just going to the pantry and like, okay, stop. It's sort of similar to what Sophia does, you know, stop, drop, check.
Yeah.
So what a great signal to get.
Yeah. And so there's a way to think about our stomachs like that, I guess, is that it carries a lot of our signals when it's trying to tell us what's going on in our gut. Removing the being on the outside and looking at it to trying to really hang out on the inside. Okay, actually, how does my stomach help me? So then it's not even about what it looks like. It's about how it helps serve me.
Oh, I love that. I think I'm going to find that really helpful, actually. What a great reframing.
There's also a little mini podcast that's called Belly Love that I'd recommend. Oh, and the one that I enjoyed the most was talking about hormones and menopause and how that impacts your belly. And it's really worth a listen, and we'll put it in the show notes below. But it talks about how the belly serves as protection for a lot of your internal organs and for the process of menopause, and how vital it is actually that as Angela mentioned before with June, that the redistribution of fat actually serves a purpose, and that fat on your stomach actually serves a purpose. So it'd be really interesting to think about those processes going into menopause as we get older, because as Angela says, I can totally relate to the that it being more and more difficult as your babies aren't babies anymore, if you've, you know, had that experience of being really appreciative because your stomach was able to house your babies, and then suddenly, yeah, they're teenagers, like your brain's going.
Yeah.
Was this child ever a baby? I mean, now a grown, swearing, resistant adult.
Exactly. That didn't come from my body.
So I think that's quite helpful. And also perhaps thinking about, like you said, Michelle, I loved your story about considering the values of other cultures and really appreciating that the way that we devalue the size of our stomachs is about our cultural conditioning. And there are so many other cultures that appreciate bigger stomachs and rounded stomachs, and that, you know, really thinking about where do those messages come from, the idea that we should have flat stomachs.
I love that. That's that's fantastic. How about you, Hannah?
Oh yeah. No,
bring it on.
I'm feeling vulnerable. Okay. So my issue, many issues, but I won't use this as full therapy, but so my chin, I have got an issue with like kind of not having a chin and sort of like my side profile being aesthetically unideal. how does one describe that? Yeah, not much of a chin, chin. I don't know. I think I've taken on this whole idea about, you know, a quote unquote weak chin.
That's interesting, because this is something that I've actually kind of recently become quite okay with.
Tell me how.
Yeah. I got some photos of my business done recently, and initially struggled with the shots that showed a double chin, and it was kind of like exposure therapy. The more I looked at them and the more I thought about how I wanted other women in the world that had a chin like mine to see those photos and to feel affirmed and that they're okay, that was the thing that actually really got me through. So I've put some of the photos on my website and I'm like, there you go, it's out there, and I hope it helps other people feel that they're okay too.
So as a brief explanation of exposure therapy, you're talking there about simply the human brain tends to work that if it sees, the more it sees something, yes, the more it accepts it and the more it appreciates it and the more it just, you know.
Exactly, it takes the sting out of it. Maybe could you look at it that way, like see how allowing your double chin to be, well, just to be, is kind of a form of activism for helping change perceptions in the world. I know you like your activism.
I do. Yeah, you really kind of got on the money there. That was clever. I see what you did there. I was thinking actually as I was saying it, resentfully sort of helping myself, I was thinking, you know, like this is, as you get older, I think, yes, you step away from perhaps some of that appreciation of, yeah, making babies or all those kinds of things. But you also get closer, I think, to wanting to understand your ancestors and wanting to understand where you've come from. And I wonder if, you know, the shape of our noses and our chins and the color of our skin, I mean, these are all legacies, right? And so without this chin or chinlessness, whatever we're going to go with, I wouldn't be a Tunnicliff. I wouldn't be from this line of people. And
yes, that ties you to your family.
And my sister and I often send each other photos, and gosh, it's nice to have a sister where you can kind of make jokes about it. But it's a bond between us that we have the same, you know, similar profile.
See, that's changing the narrative around a body part. Right, what you just described, or having that connection with your sister. I think that is such a powerful way to view, I mean, we even though we shouldn't, we do dissect our bodies.
So I learned so much, you know, I got so much out of hearing those stories, Angela, and how, you know, how we can take on those messages and make meanings in our own life. I really encourage people to go and read more of the stories. So tell us, yeah, tell us a little bit about, you know, where we can find them.
The easiest way is just to go to the Instagram page, Like Bodies Like Minds, and there's a link in the bio that links to all the stuff stories. That's the easy. But when you go into one on stuff, you'll see it, they usually connect with the other ones in the article as well. So it's quite easy to go down the rabbit hole. The other thing that is if you do go through and read the stories, or even just sort of thinking about, you know, after listening to this really great kōrero that I've had with you both, is that if ever you're having a moment where you find yourself questioning some part of your body that you don't like, why do I have skin like this, or a height like this, or a, you know, a disability like this, or an orientation like this, or a size like this, why do I have this, what's wrong with me? You've got to halt that thinking and ask the question of, hold on, what's wrong with a world that thinks that there is one right or wrong way to have a body? That's the question that we always need to be asking. I mean, and that's not to say that if, like say in my case where I ended up with an eating disorder, it is my responsibility to heal from that. It's not anyone else's responsibility to get me through that. But it wasn't my fault that I got it.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
Well, this has been brilliant. Absolutely fantastic and such a rich conversation. We're so grateful to you, Angela, and the mahi that you're doing in this world to help people question those beliefs and open their eyes to other people's experiences. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope we get to talk to you again very soon.
Oh, thank
yeah.
Thank
you for having
thank
me.
You.
You have been listening to Bod Almighty, the podcast that gives you practical, how-to steps towards body acceptance and confidence.
You can find us on Instagram at Bod Almighty Podcast.
Please do get in touch to let us know if you have any questions or suggestions. We love to hear from you.
From both of us, thank you and goodbye.